All right. Well, hey, welcome everyone. It's good to see you here. This is the hardest point in the day to teach. Everybody is kind of like starting to fade a little bit, even the presenters. And so we're going to try to keep things going here. My name is Randy, as I mentioned earlier in the day. One of my one of my passions over the years has been small group ministries. And so so it's been something that I've done for probably about 25 years now, been in some kind of small group, often leading. And then I was a pastor overseeing small groups as well for a number of years. We had a foray into house church ministry, and so we did that for a few years as well, and really found that that was very beneficial. Today what I'm going to do is we're going to talk about three essential ingredients for growing your small group ministry. This is based on a research study, but also my own experience and what I've observed over the years. All right. Before we get started, though, I want you to turn to the person next to you and say something that you appreciate about them, even if you don't know them. All right? All right. Isn't that liberating? You're talking more than that, though. You were starting to get into some stuff. All right. So we're going to look at these three essential ingredients. What makes small group ministries grow? I don't know about you, but I've tried a lot of things over the years. I've seen a lot of things done to try to get small group ministries to grow. I came through the 80s and the 90s where everybody had to be in a small group, right? And that's what we preached from our pulpits. That's what we taught. That's what we encouraged people. You know, let's get 100% of our people involved in small group ministry, right? And I've made a lot of mistakes. I've seen things work and things not work. And perhaps you have experienced the same as well. I was really intrigued by reading this book, Small Groups, Big Impact, a research study of 3,000 small group leaders in some 20 different countries. And it's a recent book, 2011. You can go to the website called Small Groups Big Impact, I think, is the name of the website where they have resources and other things. Smallgroupsbigimpact.com. Jim Igley and Dwight Maribel have written some pretty good things about what it means to grow small groups. And what they discovered is there's three key factors related to growing your small group ministry. And you know what? If you're a small group ministry overseer, a pastor, a lay leader that oversees small groups, and you've gotten up in front of people and you have tried to whip them into action, you have preached sermons on it, you have gotten into people's lives and you've told them and you've invited them to be a part of small group ministry, and sometimes you go, why haven't we seen a massive turning to small group ministry? And I think what you'll find is that the results of this study, some of the things we talk about may be helpful. Those things aren't unimportant, but what we're going to be looking at are three of the things that are most important in terms of growing small group ministries. The first one is an atmosphere of prayer in your church. We cannot take any shortcuts when it comes to spiritual life. So often as I have overseen ministries in my 20 years of pastoral ministry, I have tried to build the house on my own. I've tried to build the programs and the ministries on my own. And we know from Scripture that it's not by my strength or by my might or by yours, in fact, but it's by God's Spirit, right? It's God that builds the house. It's God that makes things grow. It's God that does the work, the deep transformational work that we desire to see. And so what they discovered in their research and what I've observed is that In these kinds of churches, you see the pastors, the church leaders modeling a lifestyle of prayer. You hear testimonies about people who are, God's answered their prayers, and they're praising God in front of people. Prayer and fasting is often emphasized. There's opportunities to pray with others. There's messages on prayer. All right, so it's a prayer-saturated kind of church. Now, we sometimes come to conferences for quick fixes. Not to say that any of you have done that today. But, we want something that we can take and tomorrow make this thing grow into the kind of ministry that we envision. And I would say that actually the shortest way to success is the longest way when it comes to small group ministry. Building a culture of prayer, developing and encouraging this lifestyle and posture of dependence on God. The second one is a culture of multiplication, equipping, a high value placed on multiplying the number of growing new Christians, new leaders. There's a clear process in place where we take people, not in necessarily a programmatic factory kind of process. I'm not saying that. Sometimes it can be a very organic, personalized, customized approach, but we have something in place where we're helping people take next steps in their faith journey, wherever they are in that journey. And there's a continual encouragement to recruit new leaders. All right, so there's this equipping culture that's taking place. How do we help people take steps? We have a new Christian who comes to the church. How do we come alongside her and help her to grow in her relationship with Jesus? And then we have, people who are in their 70s. They've walked with the Lord most of their lives. Now, how do we help them continue to grow? Right? Discipleship is not discipleship 101 in 6 weeks. Discipleship is a lifelong process. And churches that are successful in growing their small group ministry have this kind of culture. All right? It's already built into their system. It kind of makes sense. Because if you don't have a culture of growth where people are moving along, you won't have probably people who can lead new small groups. Right? They're just not in that process of growing in their relationship with God. I know a number of churches have done an assessment called Reveal. Any churches here done Reveal? All right, yeah, Darren, your church. We haven't done it yet. We're thinking about doing it, but we've talked to people who have done the assessment, and it really helps to uncover some of these deeper spiritual conditions of people within the church, and you get a sense of where people are at. And what that can do is it can give you impetus to develop ways of how do we address the conditions of people's hearts, where they are at within our church. And so that's the second characteristic, the second key essential strategy. So prayer, equipping, and then, as I said in my description of this session, the bulk of our time, we're actually going to focus in on number three, and that's coaching. Interestingly enough, they found that coaching, the others are vitally important, but when it relates to the growth of a small group ministry, coaching is even more important in terms of growing it once those others are in place. And so here you have personal meetings between, let's say, the overseer of the small group ministry and the small group leaders. The coach is aware of leaders' needs, desires, is walking alongside that person. And we also see that the group is visited by the coach. And so the coach comes by every once in a while and, sits in for an evening at a small group meeting, hangs out, and gets to know the family that small group leader is a part. Now, as I think about coaching, one of the things that is really important to me is understanding what we're trying to do when we're developing leaders. And this is something that I've developed over the years. I just call it the Christian leadership pyramid, or dimensions of Christian leadership. wrote an article on it, which I did post in the handout section of the website if you're interested in finding out more about it. But what I've done in this model is simply articulated key areas where we need to grow as leaders and where we can help others grow in their leadership. All of this hopefully is informed by biblical truth. That's the backdrop of the model. But how do we help people grow in their relationship with God? Our small group leaders. And as we go through this material, there's a couple different ways, I think, that we can envision it. One, maybe you're overseeing the small group ministry in your church, so you can think about the whole thing. But if you're a small group leader, you can also think in terms of the people in your group. How do I help them take the next steps in each of these six dimensions of leadership? But you could also just say six dimensions of the Christian life. Growing relationship with God, all right? So being rooted and grounded, as we read in Colossians 2, 6 and 7. Being imitators of God, acquiring godly, Christ-like character. And so that's a key foundational element. Understanding our calling. All right, so as I work with leaders, this is something really important to me. What is God calling you to? How has He gifted you? What are your strengths? What are the talents that God has given to you that He wants you to invest in His kingdom work? How can I help you grow in community with others? To practice the one another's of Scripture that Dan mentioned in his talk first thing this morning. How can I help you be a better teammate, team member? And I differentiate between team and community. Community, I believe, is really caring for one another, and team is functioning well together. You can have people that really love and care each other who can't actually play the game very well. A bunch of hockey players who love each other, but they don't know how to pass the puck or score goals. And then you have, of course, the opposite too, right, where teams have learned to function well together, but they don't really like each other. In Christian leadership, we want to do both. And then, of course, how can I help that small group leader or member of my small group develop the skills that they need to live out God's call on their lives? So often, when we think about developing leaders, what do we focus on? Skills, right? Yeah, and they're not unimportant. The leadership, this pyramid thing analogy breaks down in some ways, but one thing I like about it is it kind of puts things in perspective. Right, that these foundational elements really are foundational and important. And skill, even though it's given such a small portion of the pyramid, yet is also important. And when we got these other things in place, it actually becomes really important, vitally important, as we develop our skills and abilities that God has given us and that He requires of us to live out His call. So as you think about coaching, coming alongside people, whether it's small group leaders, members of your small group, others, we're going to just talk about a process. And this is something that I've learned just over the last while, actually. It's coaching and mentoring has been a part of my experience in ministry for many years, but it's only really in the last few months that I've been exposed to this particular model called COACH, the COACH model, and Terry Walling with Leader Breakthrough is the guy that helped me to understand this. It's a part of a larger two-day training, and so we're not going to obviously cover everything that we would in 2 days, but I want to give you some key pieces of it to understand a little bit more about how we can come alongside people and help them take the next steps. Coaching helps facilitate breakthrough in the lives and development of risk-taking kingdom leaders. I remember as a 9, 10-year-old, I was going to school, and increasingly I couldn't see the blackboard. you know, and I was wondering what was going on. My mom said, we better get your eyes checked. So we went to the optometrist, and in my mom's words, she said, wow, you're as blind as a bat. So I had to get glasses, and I mean, it was amazing to me. When I got my glasses, everything changed. And later on, I did do that with contact too, but it brought clarity and focus, and it was certainly significant. Well, what's happening there? Good coaching helps leaders solve problems and better cope when there's just too much. Ever feel like that? Good coaching helps reevaluate plans and solutions. Because sometimes we're heading in the wrong direction, or we're a little bit off course and need a bit of help. You are here. Good coaching helps you better understand where you're at. All right? Being able to figure out where we're at. Sometimes we can engage in self-deception, and we will sometimes deflect. You ever do that? It's not me. It's not me. And I think, too, that that sometimes we need a little bit of help to understand and to own our own issues, to be able to own them and to take the necessary steps. So some first thoughts. You do not get to clarity alone. Now, maybe sometimes you do, but I think often we need help. I'm good at twisting and distorting, not seeing stuff. But in community, others can help us to see, and that becomes vitally important. Coaching is about the person. We coach the person and work the problem. All right? So we're coming alongside the person, helping them to take the next steps. But that's the focus. We want to be about the person. Coaching is ministry, not just problem solving. I don't know about you guys, problem solvers out there, girls. You know, see a problem, want to fix it. Yeah, you know, just kind of rein that in a little bit. Coaching is ministry. We want to come alongside. We want to minister. We want to be there for people, not just problem solving. Coaching is about action, not just reflection. I must say that a lot of my mentoring over the years has been just hanging out with people, and there's value in that. You may find that the best thing that you can do with a small group leader or someone in your small group is just go out for coffee, hear their story, share some things, and that's it. Okay? But in terms of a more intentional coaching, and I'm pushing us in this, all right? I'm pushing us to consider the difference that intentional coaching can make, where we're actually meeting with small group leaders, people in our small groups, and have in our mind, okay, what are some steps? Well, that's not quite the right way to say it, but how can I help that person understand the steps that he or she needs to take? It's not just about reflecting on them. And then coaching bridges the gap between insights and new behaviors. Okay? And so that's, again, that action orientation. How do we help people move from aha to doing, taking those steps, and seeing change realized in their lives? And so coaching is about discovery. What a person discovers, they implement. One of the things that I've been discovering myself as I do research on postmoderns and the way they think, and I realize that that's hard to nail down because postmoderns think in many different ways, but increasingly discovery is such a vital part. People need to discover it themselves before they'll own it and act on it. And so the coaching approach helps with that. Okay? In Proverbs 20, verse 5, in the NIV, it says, the purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws them out. Think about that image. Draws them out. Okay? In another version, it says, though good advice lies deep within the heart, a person with understanding will draw it out. So God is doing something in the other person's life. How can we get in step with the Holy Spirit and help to draw it out, to give some clarity to it? All right, now for some real-time coaching. It's your opportunity with a partner. Ask them three questions. Who are you? And if you know them really well, that might sound kind of funny. Why did they come to this particular session? Because it was the closest one to the coffee pot. What coaching have you done? Coaching or mentoring, one-on-one, helping people. So you have 3 minutes in groups of two, or if you're with three, you have 2 minutes each to answer these questions. All right. You could say something, yeah, because you have 6 minutes. Maybe even just ask the second question, see what people say. Gonna go fill up my water. Hey, you're on. Good to see you too. Yeah, I'm just talking about coaching in my session. So. I'll maybe get them to switch so you can turn it back on. Just gonna get them to switch. Okay, if you haven't switched, you need to do so. About 2 minutes and a bit left. All right. And if you've already done both, you're very efficient. So, does it look like there's any live streamers in this one?
Yeah,
okay. Like 5 or so? Okay. Andrew Dick. Okay, good. Okay, am I on? Maybe give me a bit more volume. My voice is starting to go. Okay, if we could come back together. Come back into our great big happy family. As you were engaging with one another, you know, we may not call that a coaching session, but you were listening, you were making comments, you were nodding, you were smiling. I was watching you, and I saw that there was an engagement taking place in those conversations. Every conversation has the potential for a coaching situation, has the opportunity for you to speak into the person's life by asking a question, by affirming, by encouraging. One of the things that I did a number of years ago is I came up with some of the biggest defining moments of my life. Came up with this personal timeline. And it's interesting to me to look at that timeline and to see that there are a number of defining moments which are one sentence defining moments. My teacher in grade 1 and 2 saying, "Randy, I want you to teach this lesson to the class." When I was 15, my youth leader saying, "Randy, I want you to be a leader in the youth ministry." And those things can etch us deeply, can make an impact. And so I think every opportunity that we have to be with people is an opportunity to encourage, to build up, to practice those one another's of Scripture, especially when we have that intentionality. There's one person in my life right now, whenever I'm with that person, he speaks wisdom into my life. And it's uncanny to me. You know, we will be together for just a short time, passing in the hallway, and this person will say something, you know, and I'm going, how did he know? You know, why did he say that? That one sentence. Somebody in the room here a number of years ago, when I was going through a personal crisis, met me in the parking lot and simply said, "Randy, wait on the Lord. Wait on the Lord." And that was exactly what I needed to hear. And so if you don't see yourself as a coach, I'd like to kind of change your paradigm. You are a coach. You have influence. Every time that you engage in conversation with somebody. And so all that we're talking about here is really becoming more intentional in those conversations. And some of them will become perhaps very structured, where you will be meeting with someone on a regular basis, and it will look exactly like what I'm going to describe, with 5 steps and 4 skills and all of that. But a lot of times, our engagement with people will look a lot messier than that. But hopefully these things that we talk about will help us to be a bit more intentional and useful in those conversations. It's certainly an area that I'm growing in and want to develop more. Now, I always, when I'm talking about coaching or mentoring, the question comes up, well, what's the difference between coaching and mentoring? You know, and there's a lot of, what is the difference? Let me throw it out there. The spelling, of course, but when you think of coaching and mentoring, Nikki, what are you thinking of? Okay, so, yeah, Nikki was saying it's more specific on the mentoring side. You're giving advice, and coaching is not so much. You're trying to draw out. Okay, other other ideas about coaching, mentoring. Yes? Okay, all right, so our brother there is viewing coaching, in mentoring, the mentee taking more initiative, whereas in coaching, it's more equal. Yes, Mary Ellen. Right, so Mary Ellen was saying mentoring is more giving, this is something I have, I'm going to give to you, whereas with coaching, it's a drawing out process. Well, even in our short discussion here, there's different ideas about mentoring and coaching. And I don't have the truth on it, but I'm going to just give you some definitions that we can work with this afternoon. I'm not stuck on these necessarily, but it helps to understand the differences in terms of this discussion. So coaching, in my view, stands beside and draws inside out. Draws that inside out, kind of like the verse from Proverbs that we read earlier. Mentoring goes before and places insight within. So it's taking resources and it's giving. It's advice giving. I mean, I have been a mentor lots over the years. And I think sometimes I probably have given way too much advice and counsel. It's interesting, the other day I was doing a coaching session, and about an hour, we had wrapped up, so we had been talking for an hour. I'd asked, I think, a lot of questions, maybe some good ones in there too. And it's interesting because in the past, when I had somebody for an hour, I probably would have given a lot of counsel and advice. And I don't remember anyone ever saying to me what this guy said to me after our coaching session. He said, "Thanks for your wisdom. I just asked questions." Right? He had found wisdom on his own. He had discovered something. And it wasn't something that I had given to him. And so that's an important distinction. Now let's take a little bit closer look at these terms and unpack them just a bit more. So if we were to look at this grid, on the one side you have the client or the coachee agenda, what's important to them, and on the other side would be our agenda as the coach, the helper. Up here you have asking, and down here you've got telling. Okay? So coach, over here, right? So this is, you're concerned about the coachee's agenda, the other person, and you're asking a lot of questions. Mentoring, you're still concerned about the other person's agenda, but you're doing a lot of telling. Person explains their issue, their problem, their question, and you've got three answers for it because you've been there. You've got the experience. You know exactly how to handle it, right? Okay, and that's mentoring. And if we unpacked a couple other terms, teaching would be on this side, so very much telling, but now as a good teacher, I've come in, I come into the classroom with a body of content that I think is important for every single person on the planet to know, and I'm going to give it to them, right? And then we could say maybe discipling being up here, more of an asking approach, but we would still have a content base where we're bringing in important pieces for the disciple to know. Now, it's important, I think, to recognize in a coaching situation is that we will often take off our coach's hat and put on a mentor hat, teaching hat, a discipling hat. The key is that we continue to move back towards coaching as the default position, if this is the approach that we really believe is important. This was liberating for me. When I had been reading about coaching, I thought, I like the questions, but I also like to give advice. I think I have something to offer, so can't I share that in a coaching relationship? This approach says absolutely. Absolutely, you can do that. But the default comes back to the coaching position. All right, so let's take a look at this coach model for a few minutes here. It's similar, this is by Keith Webb, by the way, and he has a book entitled The Coach Model, I think. Is that the exact title? I should have brought it with me here. And so you have letters in the word coach corresponding to five stages of a coaching conversation. Okay, so you're taking time to connect with the leader. You're determining the session outcomes. Okay, so what's our goal here? You know, we're going to spend the next 45 minutes together or whatever. What are we trying to accomplish? Generating awareness of the issues and current reality. Determining the next steps and course of action. And then highlights, recapping what we've talked about and what the coachee or the small group leader, whoever, is committing themselves to. This is very similar in some ways to other coaching models like gospel coaching, which I've been through as well, but maybe you've been through something different. Most of them have some kind of sequence, some sort of purpose, and we're going to just look at each of those very briefly. So with connecting with the leader, you're just building rapport, you're talking, how's your week going? How's your family? You know, maybe it's recapping something from the previous discussion. Last time we talked about, you know, that you wanted to set aside 20 minutes for prayer every morning. How's that been going for you? So you're recapping that, asking questions, that relate to how they're doing. This is so vitally important. I love this stage, and I can get stuck in this stage for the entire hour. Right? Because it's fun to connect with people. Find out how they're doing, and you get telling stories, and you're sharing, and all of these good things are happening. And what I discovered that often during the connecting time is you begin to catch glimpses of some deeper things that are happening. Could be personal issues, problems, challenges, could be opportunities, you know, like they start sharing a little bit about a new job possibility. Right? Those are things that may come back into the conversation later on. So keep them in mind. Don't lose sight of them. During the outcome part of the conversation, find out what the person would like to discuss. All right? So what is important to them? Questions, example questions. You know, what result would you like to take away from our meeting today? So this is assuming it's a bit more formal. All right? You've set up times to meet with people, and there's an understanding. It's a coaching relationship. So these kind of questions will not be unexpected if you set that up that way. What would you like to work on? What would make today's meeting successful, helpful for you? And then moving on to awareness, you want to discover more about the outcome. One of the things that often happens in the medical office, you know, somebody comes in to see the doctor, and they're talking about symptoms, right? Well, I've been having headaches, and I've got a pain in my elbow, and my eye is droopy, right? And so now the doctor has to figure out from these symptoms, what's the chief concern here? What's the underlying problem, if there is one? And so during the awareness phase, you're trying to get beneath the issues. What's really going on here? The person has been talking a lot about, being frustrated at work, being frustrated at home, being frustrated, you know, and you kind of go, okay, is there something deeper going on here? And so you're asking questions. Tell me about what you're presently thinking. What are some of the major obstacles in your life right now? Let's look at this from a different perspective. What else could be happening here? This approach, asking questions, is, I think, really powerful. Apart from even the structure, asking good questions can make a huge difference. Because with questions, you're asking people to think deeper often, to think beyond, to bend their frame. I lived in Thailand for a while with my family. And I remember hanging out with one of the leaders of Campus Crusade Thailand. We were spending a fair bit of time together, and what impressed me was he was a master at asking questions. He would go into a situation, kind of delicate situation, and there was stuff happening, and right away we could see what needed, from our perspective, what needed to happen to improve the situation. And so he could have come in and say, well, you guys really need to do this. But instead he would just come in and he would ask questions about the situation, what was their perspective, what was frustrating them. And all of a sudden they were coming up with solutions and plans because it had generated awareness. And so that is, I believe, very critical. Determining the next steps and course of action. Excuse me. So here you're capturing insights and putting them in actionable steps. So what steps would you like to take? What are your options? How would you like to grow in this particular area? How would you like to engage with this person that you've identified as having a problem with? Right? And so you're getting them to actually begin to think concretely. What do I need to do to make this better? I love that about this approach to coaching. This is often the difference between sort of a counseling approach to mentoring, where you're empathetic and listening, and this adds a very strong action orientation to it. What can you do to make this better? And how committed are you to it? And then at the end of your discussion, just to summarize, so what did we talk about today? What are you leaving with? What are the plans that the steps that you're going to take? You're not doing it. You're not telling them, well, if I heard you correctly, you said this. No. Because often the spirit has been working in ways, mysterious ways, and they've actually, God's impressed them with something a little bit different than what you think is most important, and that's okay. Now, sometimes it could be deception, and you need to keep on working with that, but I think that that's important. All right, let me take a pause here. So that gives you a sense of these five stages of a coaching conversation. Questions about this? Yeah. I think that for me, I mean, there's a number of things, but ownership is huge, because what you're doing is you're helping the person to discover on their own something that they need to do, and when people discover something on their own, they're much more likely to act upon it. Now, there's still some people out there who will respond to, you need to do this, right? And I'm not saying there's no value in that, but I think a lot of people, once they come to an understanding on their own, they've discovered, yeah, that is the problem, and these are the steps I need to take, they're more willing to take those steps. Yeah, good question. And for those of you who are live streaming, and I know there's a number of you out there, I'm sorry I'm not mentioning these questions, but the question was, are there certain issues, questions, problems that where ownership is more important and where coaching could contribute? And yeah, I think that when you look at that leadership pyramid that I mentioned, those three or four foundational elements, a growing relationship with God, character issues, calling, community. I mean, those four in particular stand out to me as being particularly important in a coaching discussion. When it comes to skills and a sense of team, you know, you can probably, ownership isn't that as important. You know, you can go to a class or, you know, read a book or whatever and probably pick up some of that stuff. So I'd say those foundational elements. Yeah. Dan? Yeah, 3 to 5. Yeah, 3. So the question was, how many people would you coach at a time? So 3 to 5, right? So when I did this particular training, that was the challenge, was to go find 3 people and to start this kind of coaching process. And so that's, I've done, I got 2 that are going right now, and a 3rd hopefully in the next little while. Yeah.
So to clarify, not 3 to 5 people at once.
No, not at once. Thank you. That becomes a different situation, yeah. It's more like group coaching, yeah. And meeting 45 minutes to an hour, that's typically what I do. And, you know, do that every week or 2. And so what I've done with one of the guys is I've said, let's meet 6 times over the next 3-4 months, see how it goes, and then we'll reevaluate at that point.
Who initiates?
Okay. Yeah, and that's a great question. I think that it really depends on the person and the situation. I know that often it feels a little bit awkward to initiate, to ask somebody, you know, can I coach you? It presumes something, right? It says, well, hey, I've got something here. But I think that, you know, if done appropriately and sensitively, humbly, that it can certainly work that way. But, you know, the other way too. I'm thinking of in terms of your small group ministries, if you're overseeing a small group ministry, and maybe there's 7, let's say there's 7 small groups in your church, and you're the overseer, and you go, okay, I've just been told that I need to have a coaching relationship with these 7 leaders. Now what do I do? Right? Some of them may not be willing to do that. And then it becomes just casual. When you see them, make it as intentional as possible. Kind of like, almost like, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a subversive coaching. You know, where you're not trying to subvert anybody, but you're behind the scenes and you're doing it in a secretive kind of way in your conversations, trying to make an impact. Okay, so this was from one of our live streamers. How can you be objective in your coaching? I think that's a challenge in any kind of conversation because we bring biases with us. We have a certain way of thinking. And when we do the full coaches training, we do spend a fair bit of time talking about how we have this almost like a, you know, we come in and we see things that actually may not be there, and it really requires suspending judgment and saying, you know what, I'm going to just pull back. I'm going to try to ask questions that are not judgmental, that are not leading questions, right? I'm good at leading questions, right? So what are you going to, you know, when are you going to buy a new car? You know, what are you going to do about that loan? You know, and I'm assuming that there's a certain answer that's the right answer. So, yeah, I think that there's a number of strategies that we can do to try to be more objective. Any other comments or questions? Yeah, Nikki. Can you pause just for a sec? So Nikki was just saying that related to a previous question about ownership, that sometimes when we're stuck in behaviors, that a coaching approach can be more useful, whereas in a mentoring approach, the person might give advice and it just sort of perpetuates a passive kind of stance. Okay.
My question is, what do you do with a coachee who's lacking in personal vision, who doesn't have a clear articulation of a goal for themselves?
Right. Yeah, and I mean, that certainly can happen, where they may not want to commit to anything. You know, they... I mean, you have to go where people are at, right? But I think that's where it's so powerful. Like, I know that when I'm in a coaching relationship, I'm praying for that person more than I would otherwise. It's just, you know, I know more about them, I'm more committed to them as individuals, and I think that that becomes just another way of God working in their lives and opening something up. Not that that's going to happen soon, or may, you know, it may never happen, but there's a greater possibility. And if I'm in that relationship, and at least we're meeting, then I can be a part of it when something does happen, when that person is ready to make a commitment to something. Another online question?
Yeah.
Sure.
So the question from an online user is, coaching can be a subjective experience, empathizing with the mentee. Where can we draw the line?
Yeah, I mean, empathy is important, right? Entering into the other person's perspective. You know, and again, I'm not doing justice to this approach because we do spend time talking about the importance of empathy. We'll get into that a little bit with the four skills. And so I think that's the case with any kind of relationship where you want to be empathetic and you want to be somewhat differentiated. You want to maintain enough individuality within that relationship so that you can add perspective clarifying questions, right? You don't become so absorbed in their position that you no longer have the capacity to ask questions that get them beyond. So I think that's an important comment, almost a warning that even as we enter in to someone's frame of reference, that we still maintain our own perspective and can add the kinds of questions that enlarge theirs. Okay, so if I heard you correctly, the question relates to ethical boundaries and if the coachee comes to a conclusion that is ethically suspect, how do we speak into that process at that point?
Yeah, but do we have a responsibility as coaches to speak into that?
Yeah.
Or
yes.
Or
we do, and that's where I put on the mentor hat, or the counselor hat, or the teacher hat, right? And say, or ask, you know, would it be okay if I offered my perspective on what you've just said as an action step? And then at that point, you know, I can then, if they've said yes, I can step into that and say, you know, from my perspective, this is how I'm seeing it. Daniel.
Just thinking too, to the question maybe before, which was, is this a client-centered approach, right?
Mm. That's good. Okay, we're going to...
One
more. Okay, then we'll move on.
Do you think it would be advantageous to avoid using coaching terminology in the small group leadership structure, even though we are training people on how to be a good coach?
Yeah, I think it depends on your culture and what people think of when they hear the term coach. I mean, you could call it something else. The purpose is, how do we help people take next steps through an approach that they will actually own in the end? Something that becomes personalized and meaningful for them. And so, in my view, you can call that mentoring, coaching. You can simply call that going for coffee. But there's an intentionality there, right? How am I going to take that person to the next level? Okay, four coaching skills that we want to look at. The first one is listening. Level one, you are listening, but the preoccupation is really you, all right, and not them. And so you're viewing everything through your grid. You've got your subjectivities and judgments and whatever else happening, and perhaps you're even thinking about how you're going to respond to them. They've just shared something, and you're coming up with all sorts of responses. Level two is about them. You're listening, so here's the empathy side. You're seeking to hear the issues behind the issues and to understand. So that's good, entering into their perspective. But level three is a you and them. So it's maintaining your individuality even as you enter into their frame of reference. Okay, and so level three is the most powerful level of listening. Five ways to listen better. So this is empathetic or empathic. I guess empathetic, listening, obviously listening with our mind, being open to what they're saying, being attentive, actually hearing them, listening with our body, that's our nonverbal communication. You probably know this, but if your nonverbal communication is saying that you're not listening, that's exactly what the person hears. Okay? So if you're, you know, eye contact, you're checking your watch, you're multitasking, I mean, that just communicates you don't, you're not listening, and maybe don't even care. And so that obviously impacts the coaching relationship. Listen with your words, all right? So if I heard you correctly, you said this periodically just to make sure that you're hearing them. Listen with your intuition. What are they actually saying behind those words? I was in a coaching situation just, was it this week or last week? No, it was this week. And I was picking up on a theme, and the person wasn't actually talking about that theme, but I asked and I mentioned it, and the person said, yeah, you know, it was something that was unsaid, but she was actually saying it. And, you know, being able to read between the lines and hopefully to hear God's voice, to listen with the Holy Spirit, is so important. You know, what's the word? What's the word that this person needs to hear? What's the question, Lord, that I can ask this person that will help them? You know, my dear wife, she's you know, we've been learning this stuff together, this coaching. So we we'll sometimes coach each other. It's kind of interesting, but we'll. Go back and forth. We drove to Alberta, and we gave each other permission to coach each other, and it was actually turned out really good. But she the other day was meeting with somebody, and she had come up with a whole bunch of questions ahead of time, just, you know, kind of praying, Lord, what are the questions that you would have me to ask this person at this stage in her walk? And she had her list of 8 or 10 questions. You know, not that she went into them and read through them, but they were in the back of her mind, just, you know, Lord, if these are the ones, help me to know when to ask them. How do you know if you've listened well? Leaders feel listened to and understood. You begin to understand, and together you begin to surface the real issue. The second core skill is expanding. So with listening, you're really doing that hopefully throughout the entire process. Expanding is more in these areas right here, outcome and generating awareness. Change begins the moment you ask a question. That's a good question. The key to coaching is good questions, and questions can help coaches to both listen and expand awareness, to expand their perspective. Often good questions are about asking the obvious, right? Sometimes we shy away. We think, oh, I got to come up with a really good question. And all we need to do is ask the obvious. Why are there square tires on your car, right? And it can just begin to explore, help the person to explore different things. The power is in the question. Seven types of questions. Open questions. What makes you think that that particular course of action will achieve what you desire? Emotive. How do you feel when you carry on and engage in that particular activity? Testing assumptions. I'm hearing that you want to get rid of this. Is that what you've decided? Or what have you decided? Who, what, when, where? So you're gathering facts. Development. What does this say about how God is shaping you? One of the questions that I enjoy asking people is simply, how's your heart? How's your heart? I don't think I've ever gotten a glib answer to that question. How's your heart? Because it says, I'm actually concerned about you and like to know how you're doing deep down. Why questions? What could you have done? All right, so it's evaluating as you think about that situation. What could you have done? You're disappointed. Is there anything else that you could have done that would have perhaps been better? And then asking permission, can I speak into this situation? Can I put on my teacher hat for a moment, my mentor hat? Seven questions, and as Daniel mentioned earlier, we really need to make a switch from, God, what do you want me to say, to God, what are you at work doing? What are you doing in this person's life? How can I be a part of that? How can I serve your agenda? And how can we together join you in that work? Okay, so partnering with the Holy Spirit and what he wants to do in that person's life. The third coaching skill is focusing. Good coaching helps pinpoint the problems, right? Ah, yes, the problems. I think this person has a problem. Good coaching helps to reveal the issues surrounding the issue. What is the key issue? So here we're trying to generate awareness, to focus on that chief medical complaint. What's really going on beneath the surface here? Issues behind the issue, what's holding them back? What could be driving them or controlling them? To come up with some action steps. And so when I'm meeting with a person in a coaching relationship, coaching session, I will ask them, you know, so we've identified a goal, an outcome that we think is important. Now, what are some steps that you could take this next week or between now and the next time that we meet to address this particular issue? And you know, most of the time, people are able to identify, well, I could do this and this, and we'll talk about that, and then maybe this one's actually more important, they'll recognize in the end and go with that. Abraham Lincoln has said that a goal properly set is halfway reached, right? So if you can set a good goal, you're already halfway towards accomplishing that. So a smart action step could be, I will contact Bill about the funding request and we'll see if he will commit to the $500 gift by December 1st. Okay, so I mean, that's really specific and measurable. And then finally, empowering. And I did want to show a video clip here. Just give me a moment here and we'll get her set up on these other speakers. So this is an NBA basketball game, in case you didn't pick that up. This girl's won a contest, and she's going to sing the national anthem. Mo Cheeks, the basketball coach. What did the coach do?
What did he
came alongside? Yeah. What else did he do?
Sang off
key. He's terrible singer. Great coach, but terrible singer. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. He had his arm on her, didn't he? Yeah. Pardon? Yeah. Yeah, he kept it down and just kind of, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that powerful? You know, the empowerment that took place, I mean, it made the difference. And as we talk about coaching, that empowering is so vitally important. Coming alongside people, standing with them, encouraging them to take whatever steps they need to take, not steps that we need to take or that we want them to take, but steps that God wants them to take. Oops, I missed a couple slides there. I just wanted to go back there to a firm effort. All right, so to be positive, to be supportive, you know, I've seen you take steps. That's awesome. You know what? God's doing a work in your life. I just want to commend you for being courageous in taking that step, acknowledging the progress that they've made, celebrating the successes. And what happens when we do that is we come alongside like Mo Cheeks did, and we support, we encourage, and we help them to continue to take the steps that they need to. And so that's the model, the coaching model. As I mentioned before, it's part of a larger process. We're going to be doing a day of leadership coaching on May 31st at our next Ministry Lift event. If this interests you to kind of go in deeper and to really continue to develop the skills, that may be an option for you. And we're looking at doing two-day events as well, two-day coaching training in the future too. Now, we have a few minutes before the end of our session here. Are there other questions and comments? Nikki. Okay, so what role does prayer play in the actual coaching session? I think it plays a vital role. I like to pray when I meet with somebody. I like to start with prayer. I like to end with prayer. And hopefully I pray quietly as we're going through it. But I find that inviting God's presence into the coaching session at the start sets a tone for the coaching session. All of a sudden, there's an expectation, especially if we've prayed at God, I pray that you would speak through our conversation. I mean, now there's an expectation that we've actually asked God to do something. We better be ready, right? And then at the end, you know, as they've articulated some things, some concerns, action steps, I think it's just so appropriate to conclude with prayer for that person. You know, God would help them take those steps. So yeah, thank you for mentioning that. That's a key part in the way I like to coach. I just forgot to mention it. Online question.
Are there some books on coaching that you recommend?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Daniel, what's the exact title of the book? Is it just called The Coach Model?
Yeah.
Okay. And
you'll find it on Amazon. Just put Coach Model, Keith Webb.
Coach Model by Keith Webb. So that's, if you wanted to dive deeper on your own into this particular approach, that would be certainly one book that I would recommend. Ike, what's one you would recommend? Because this is a passion area of yours too.
The other one is Leadership Coaching by Tony. I can't pronounce his name. Stofitz,
yeah. So Leadership Coaching by Tony Stofitz. Okay, good. Any other recommendations out there of coaching books that you found helpful? Or mentoring books. All right. Okay, so there's a couple. Sorry?
Stuck.
By Terry Wallings, the book Stuck. Yeah, that one is good too for helping people through transitions, major transitions in their life. Yeah. I mean, the classic Clinton and Stanley book on mentoring, I mean, you can't go wrong with reading his material. Excellent material. Dan. Yes.
Going back to the national anthem, the sun there, one of the underlying things that kind of comes through for me is that that people do respond to imperfection. You know, we often portray people who are leading that they have to be perfect, they have to make perfect decisions. And that particular instance, I in my observation of athletic events, seldom do you see players singing, you know, and coaches singing along with the national anthem, but it was out of empathy for her that they engaged at that level.
Yeah.
And so I wonder sometimes in our work with leaders whether we need to allow them to be imperfect and tell them that perfection is not an ultimate goal.
Yeah. Good. Thank you, Dan. I would agree with that. The final comment for those of you online was basically encouraging the people that we coach that perfection is not the final goal, that it's okay to be in process. It's okay to be imperfect. And I think that's so important in our small groups too, that we cultivate this understanding that we're under construction, that we're in process, and it's okay to mess up. It's okay to be imperfect. In fact, we welcome discussion about where we're at in the journey and the hiccups along the way and detours and other things. And so I think that's a good addition too. Yeah, another online question.
One of our online users wonders, what do you think of the book Kingdom Man by Tony Evans, I believe?
I have not read that book, so I'm sorry, I can't comment on that. Yeah, any other questions, comments? Yeah, Christine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that there's there's a couple thoughts that come to mind. My thought is that you do need to be sensitive to the group, and if it's something that would not be welcome and would be counterproductive, then it may not be a good thing to do. The second thought comes to mind is that we sometimes have this notion in our groups that we'll experience less intimacy if a new person comes. And that's true at one level, because some people may not be willing to share with a newcomer or in this case, a leader, an overseer in the group. But I'm picking up from some of the research that in fact, groups that continue to have this mindset that we can't have people coming in, that it will somehow break up our community, are actually often deceiving themselves. They've achieved a certain level of intimacy and somehow think that new people would undermine that, when in fact it wouldn't. This particular book, Small Groups, Big Impact, their research found that groups that have an open door with new people coming regularly actually report experiencing greater intimacy than those that don't. All right, and this is something I'll touch on tomorrow in one of the sessions in greater detail, building intimacy in your group. Okay, well, I think we're at break time, so thank you very much, and we will reconvene in the next set of sessions at 3:15. So breaks or snacks are outside there.